ADP, meet GDP.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the morning open, a look at the economy as trading gets started for the day. Less bad is the best we can do. We're going to talk about some economic indicators in just a moment. First, where's Wall Street? Markets are down right now. The S&P down about 0.9%. The NASDAQ down 0.7% right now. The Dow off about 83 points at 96.59. Markets in Europe are higher right now by under 0.25%. And shares were mixed in Asia. Private employment service ADP said today companies cut 254,000 jobs this month. And in the final revision of the nation's second quarter economy, the Commerce Department said the gross domestic product fell at 0.7%. We're going to get some analysis on what all that means. And Diane Swonk, chief economist from Mesirow Financial, joins us live from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So just ahead of a big unemployment report on Friday, ADP comes out with a figure that's bigger than analysts were predicting. I mean, where's this recovery we keep hearing about?
Well, it certainly isn't the recovery that we'd all like to have. It's certainly not our father's recovery. It's there, technically, but certainly for Main Street, it's still going to be lagging for some time. All we can say is the pace of job loss has abated since the beginning of the year, but that doesn't say much when we're losing almost 750,000 jobs a year and we're down to 250,000. That's not a lot of reassurance.
Yeah, a little hope, though, a little reassurance with the Commerce Department GDP number. Its final revision for the second quarter is a little better than expected. I think it was 1% last month, and now it's down to 0.7% down. Economy's doing a little better, Diane, but jobs are still tanking. Why?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. What the economy's doing better is because of government support. Much of the reason for the upward or revision, so it was less bad in the second quarter, was because of stimulus. Government stimulus did come through and mitigated some of the losses, and that's the best we can hope for right now is mitigating losses, particularly when it comes to job losses. So what we're not seeing is job creation yet, but we're mitigating losses, and that's unfortunately the best we can hope for right now. We'll get technically positive growth in the second half of the year. The Cash for Clunkers program was good, and it even brought back some GM workers, but not much when you think about the totality of how many jobs we've lost out there.
All right, Diane Swonk, thanks for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. With swine flu making the rounds, here's a big what if. According to a new report, if all of the nation's schools and daycare centers were to close for a month because of the H1N1 virus, it could cost between $10 and $47 billion, a conservative estimate according to the Brookings Institution today. We remember what the swine flu outbreak did to Mexico's economy when it hit last spring. What are the nation's businesses most worried about? A new survey is out, and Marketplace's Elisa Roth has more.
Businesses are worried about not being able to get the swine flu vaccine for their employees, and they're not sure where to find out about it. John Castellani is president of the Business Roundtable, the association of top CEOs that did the survey.
Nearly a third of our members have some questions about information, and that is, where do we get information on vaccines? What do the flu severity levels actually mean to business? And who's leading the flu preparation efforts? Which are the government agencies?
But he says businesses are overwhelmingly prepared for an outbreak of swine flu. Among other things, more than 90% say they've updated their emergency plans since the first outbreak last spring. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
There is a formal recall on the way for 3.8 million Toyota cars. The automaker is addressing problems with floor mats that could interfere with the vehicle's gas pedal. The company says it'll be the largest U.S. recall in its history. One thing about financial crises, they breed creativity. Take General Motors. As it emerged from bankruptcy back in July, it decided to try an experiment. It had its California dealers post new cars for sale on eBay. Well, that experiment ends today. Marketplace's Rico Galliano brings us this report card.
Based on the numbers, the program earned an F. GM's California dealers posted tens of thousands of new cars on eBay. Judging by the company's seller profile, they only sold about 20 through the site. But according to Automotive News reporter Richard Truitt, dealers still give the experiment a passing grade.
They'll tell you, yes, they have seen people who have seen a car on eBay but decided just to go down to the dealership and negotiate that way.
In fact, GM says the eBay posts led 15,000 buyers to contact dealers for price quotes. Those leads didn't translate into a significant uptick in sales, but Richard Truitt says in California, just sparking consumer interest is a victory for GM.
Because they don't sell very many vehicles out there except for pickup trucks.
So why is the program ending? Phil Reed of Edmunds.com thinks GM is just retooling before a bigger relaunch.
They feel that they're probably onto something, but they need to figure out how to turn it into real sales.
GM says it's considering rolling out some version of the program nationally. Meanwhile, its dealers continue to sell certified used vehicles on eBay. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, September 30th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. The International Monetary Fund says the global financial system is in slightly better shape than it earlier thought. The IMF has cut its forecast for likely losses from the financial crisis. But at a summit in Istanbul, the fund is warned of possible dangers ahead. From the Marketplace European Desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
The IMF is less pessimistic than it was 6 months ago. Then it forecast that global losses from the crisis would hit $4 trillion. Today it thinks that figure will be smaller, about $3.4 trillion. The fund points out the global economy is recovering more strongly than expected. Bank balance sheets look healthier. But there's a caveat. The fund says the crisis is far from over. We shouldn't be blinded by the buoyancy of financial markets. Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank.
There's a feeling amongst many economists, and I think many economists at the fund, that there could indeed be a second leg and that expectations have got ahead of reality.
The IMF reckons the banks are only halfway through the process of writing off their losses. There could be some nasty shocks ahead, which could trigger another downward lurch in the global recession. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Today, we should get our first look at the Senate's version of a climate change bill. Senators Barbara Boxer and John Kerry have been working on it for months. The bill proposes slashing carbon emissions by 20% by 2020. Now, a big part of that effort lies in handing out permission slips to pollute, or so-called carbon allowances. Ashley Milne-Tite explains.
The government would hand out a set number of carbon allowances to companies. Most would be free until 2025, but some would be auctioned. Mark Bernstein runs the University of Southern California's Energy Institute.
I believe that to make this work, more and more have to be auctioned more rapidly to begin to get the right price signal into the market. And the key here is carbon should have a cost to it. It should be expensive.
Many of the allowances and the money they eventually generate will go to local utilities. Daniel Lashoff is with the National Resources Defense Council. He says the money could be used to help consumers become more energy efficient.
That would help you lower your electric bill by helping you use fewer kilowatt hours.
It all sounds hopeful, but it looks like the U.S. may not pass a bill in time for a new global climate treaty set for December. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
In the past few years, fantasy football has turned from a hobby into big business. Here's how it works. Players pay an entry fee, and their money is pooled. Players act like real owners. They draft stars onto their fantasy teams. If their team wins, the owner gets a big chunk of that cash. But what if the star gets hurt? Sally Herships reports on a new option.
Okay, football fans, remember Patriots quarterback Tom Brady's first game last season?
Tom Brady took a tremendous hit as he released that ball right on his left leg.
Paul Charchian does.
Oh, yeah. I mean, watching it thinking, no, can't be that bad. Can't get up, get up, get up. It can be emotional.
Especially if you have money invested. Not only is Charchian a Patriots fan, he also plays fantasy football. Tom Brady was on two of Charchian's five teams, but Brady blew out his knee and was done for the season. In the past, owners of fantasy teams like Charchian just had to suck it up when players were hurt. But now there's a new option, insurance. That's real insurance for real players on fantasy teams.
On average, the fantasy team owner spends about $150 to field a team.
Anthony Ciccone is the president of Fantasy Sports Insurance, the company that's offering the coverage. He says an insurance policy costs about 10% of your investment, what you spend on your league fees, fantasy websites, magazines. Say this adds up to that average cost of about $150. Then a policy,
that would cost you about $16.
And if your player gets injured and misses most of the season, you get your money back. Football fan Paul Charchian is also president of the Fantasy Sports Trade Association. He says fantasy players spend $800 million a year on fantasy sports. But will they buy insurance policies? Charchian says only about 5% of players invest big bucks in the game.
But if you were in maybe a $500 league and you had two or three players that were really the keys to your success, it might make sense to spend $50 to ensure they're the prospects of success and not necessarily take a big loss.
Anthony Ciccone says his insurance company has already sold three times as many policies as they planned. But because the NFL season has already started, you'll have to wait till next year to buy football insurance. So until then, if you're watching a game, keep your fingers crossed that your best player doesn't get hurt.
Stick him!
Kill him!
Yeah! Yeah!
I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Today, the Securities and Exchange Commission continues its look at short selling. It's a way of betting against a company's stock. Short sellers were blamed for driving down stock prices in the financial fallout. Some people want new controls. Others say that's bad for investors. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports on why short selling's so controversial.
Let's say I want to bet that a company's shares are overvalued. I'll get someone to lend me some shares, and I'll sell them at today's price. My bet is that when I have to pay back the shares I borrowed, the price will have dropped, and I can buy them more cheaply. Then I get to pocket the difference. James Angel teaches finance at Georgetown University. He says to some people, there's something unsavory about that.
Short sellers make money when the stock price goes down. And there's this just natural feeling that making money off the misfortunes of others is somehow bad.
But Angel says short sellers provide a service. They identify stocks that are overpriced, and that keeps prices fair for everyone. He says, think about the people who make Band-Aids.
The only time you need a Band-Aid is when you get a cut. So the people who make Band-Aids are really profiting from the misfortune of others. But I'm really glad they're doing that because, you know, I've got a Band-Aid when I need it.
Short selling is perfectly legal, but regulators are worried about abuses. Critics say traders can pile on to drive down a stock or spread rumors. Sometimes traders short a stock without actually borrowing it. That's known as naked short selling. Peter Chepkavage is general counsel at Plexus Consulting.
The SEC rule on this is very weak, and we believe it was one major cause of the demise of Bear and Lehman.
That is Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. The SEC will look at ways to curb naked shorting today. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Finally, here was the dilemma for the Wisconsin Tourism Federation. The trade group had a really classy design for its acronym WTF. You see where this is going, right? The logo caught the attention of a blog that compiles a list of unfortunate corporate logos. Comments there focused on whether the term WTF was best suited to boost tourism in the state. As a way to forego the attention of the acronym and get back to the business of getting people to Wisconsin, the new name of the group is now TFW, the Tourism Federation of Wisconsin. Thankful that someone pointed it out, and thankful for prepositions. Hey, check us out online at marketplace.org. Share your thoughts with us in the Scratch Pad, and our online host and blogger Scott Jagow is there waiting for your thoughts, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Wednesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.